Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 7, Episode 5, titled Go Getters. I could have sworn there would be a Black Keys song somewhere in this episode, and they failed me. They failed me. On multiple levels, they failed me. Although, it wasn't a bad episode.
It must sting really bad, because this is the first time The Walking Dead's let you down.
I mean, the first time,
it always stings extra hard.
My hopes had been so high.
You know what? I was really encouraged and emboldened by this episode because they successfully told not one, not two, but three separate arcs simultaneously. It can be done.
Yeah, they really they're talking about the writers when they said go-getters because this is a pack of go-getters. They're like, fuck this single storyline. We're doing three.
Right. I was thinking over the weekend because I forget what got me on this, but I was talking to somebody and we were talking about the storyline structure. And I was like, I hope they're not doing this because, like, telling a singular focused story has got to be, like, easy mode for writers, right? Because it's much harder to pace an episode when you're cutting back and forth and not losing the plot. And
yeah, it's trickier.
But on the other hand, it does feel like it overall bogs down the storyline when you're doing, you know, because it takes 4 or 5 weeks before you get back to your meticulously crafted character moments. Let's be generous and call them that.
Right.
And everyone's forgotten. Like, think of the Tara situation and the Heath situation is burgeoning where, like, people are like, wow, it's been so long since we've seen them and so long since, I mean, are we going to get an emotional reaction? Like,
I don't know.
It's so funny because a lot of the justification they use for delaying the deaths until next year is because they wanted to make sure the emotional reaction that the cast and everyone had, you know, is not distant from our reaction. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that we get to the hilltop and, like, Glenn and Abraham are just buried. No real time to deal with, like, how that, you know, when all happened and what all conversations Sasha and Maggie had. Tara and Heath are going to come by, and surely they're not going to stop the episode to let them process every fucking thing that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, that's the difficulty of this kind of ensemble cast, right? Because if you do have a lot of people that the audience could potentially care about, then it becomes a challenge to keep them all relevant in any given moment during the season, whereas a show like Breaking Bad with a near singular focus is a lot easier to do that with, right? You can have an episode with Jesse entirely, and then an episode with Walt, and then you've covered the whole spectrum of characters.
If you've got, like, a half dozen episodes throughout the entire run that people care, and that's probably being generous. That's throwing Skyler and Hank and which...
But they're all kind of wrapped up in Walt's storyline.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's easier, but, you know, I think it's a challenge, but whew, they got to find a way, because this episode felt in a lot more moving forward.
Yeah.
Just because they did. They were trying to keep these balls in the air, and I thought it looked good on them.
Yeah, the pacing felt very much better this episode. I still, you know, have a couple of things that I think are subpar about this episode, but overall, I was pleased with it.
All right. Do we have anything else, or should we get right into the episode proper?
Let's do it.
Dr. Carson, who is the obstetrician / doctor at the Hilltop, welcomes Maggie and tells her uterus is partially separated.
Anytime
you're tearing placentas and uteruses, it just and you got a baby inside you, that seems like a bad deal. It reassures her that she hasn't lost a baby. She gets to listen to the heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nice moment, but he sternly warns her to take it easy, and that she's gonna have to stay at Hilltop for the duration.
Plays the entire Eagles catalog for her. Just take it easy, Maggie.
And she's gonna have to stay there for the duration because she's got an at-risk pregnancy now.
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty big moment for Maggie. You know, after losing Glenn, this would certainly be a terrible thing to happen to her, to lose this baby.
Yeah,
which, like, is the only thing that she would have left of Glenn, aside from a pocket watch that she discards at the end.
and you can't go back home. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a pregnant woman who's lost her husband, and your community is now being separated from you because of the fact that you're going to have to stay bed rest for six, seven months.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously she goes on to make the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sasha shows Maggie to Abraham and Glenn's grave, which she's hastily erected at some remote location in Hilltop. Sasha gives Maggie Herschel's watch, which we've jokingly referred to many times as the keys to Maggie's vagina, which Maggie decides to leave on Glenn's grave. She's hanging him up. No more. She's done. Glenn was her everything. Sasha reaffirms that she's on board with the staying idea and that she'll join them. Jesus then brings in some lettuce and parsley, I think, for a bouquet. He says they're blue flowers, but they are neither blue nor flowers.
Yeah, I don't.
You brought garnishing, Jesus.
It's for calm and release. Is he trying to like release the spirits of Abraham and Glenn?
Nobody wants to be hunted by Mother Dick.
No, God, no. And the orange flowers. If he had put orange flowers on there, you don't even want to know.
Mm-mm.
Don't even ask.
Nope.
I got to say, there's a disparity here between what Glenn had and what Abraham had. Glenn had a keepsake. Abraham just had a cigar.
And a broken piece of taillight that he put on a necklace.
Fair.
I mean, he didn't have nothing.
And I'm amazed at how fast Sasha is willing to just burn that thing, just light it up. Like, she's no Will Smith. Will Smith waited for the nuke to be in place.
Right.
She's just like, yeah. Episode one after his death. Let's do it.
Yeah, you know, it's celebration time.
Yeah.
Gregory comes in and demands an explanation for the failure of the Alexandrians' attack on the Negan saviors. He wants to know that if they knew about the deal that they took, which that's kind of settled something I probably should have already known. The fact that the saviors were all the saviors that would have known about the duplicity of offering up a fake Gregory head were all massacred.
Yeah.
So there's no way for Negan to know that this was something that the Hilltop was involved in. He also explains that they don't bury the dead. They burn them for some kind of pseudo, I guess, religious philosophical reason.
Yeah, to move on is what Jesus later says.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's kind of, I'm more of a crematory type of guy than kind of guy. So I kind of take a shine to Hilltop a bit. He also reminds everyone that he's been recuperating from a stab wound, too.
This
he's
writing.
Not at full strength.
This fucking writing.
Uh-huh.
I've been recuperating, too, Jesus. You remember my stab wound? You remember it, huh?
Oh, the one you got
back
inside?
A couple episodes ago? You remember that?
Was it through your palm and your feet, too?
It's
you don't
writing.
Go up and get Jesus when stab wounds are on the line. That's just asking to lose. Come on,
yeah.
Now. And he says that, correctly, here's the thing, like, I'm not going to be on board with Gregory for the rest of the episode, but the way he's sizing up the situation is dead on correct and makes me I think we're supposed to think that he's an inept leader, but he's saying everything that's true. You promised us one thing. We paid in advance. You're royally fucked up. And not only did that, you did that, but you fucked up in a way that's now leaving us to risk for reprisal.
Right.
By your just mere presence here.
Well, as Maggie says later, you know, the problem is not that he's an idiot necessarily. He's a coward.
Right.
And I think she nails it.
But on the other hand, like, I don't think this is de facto cowardly behavior. This is, and also, what would Rick do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, after he's been traumatized by Negan at this point, he would just shelter two people that fucked him over on a deal? Like, I think.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not saying that Gregory's not a complete dildo.
Yeah, I hate
guy. I'm just saying that they're doing a bad job in this scene of getting me off his side.
They also, they're doing a bad job of characterization. Like, okay. One, maybe a second reference to him forgetting names or not giving a shit about people's names would do it. They do it like five times in this episode, and it loses its charm. Like, the gag is good.
Mm-hmm.
This guy doesn't fucking remember names. Okay,
right.
Great. Maybe lay off the gas a little on that.
Okay. He also finally relents to letting them stay a single night because, you know, Jesus implores him to think of the women and the unborn child, and I guess he turns soft at the last minute. Back at Alexandria, Carl is having a hard time with darts on account of his depth perception, and also having a hard time accepting this is the new reality. They work for Negan.
You know what? This is interesting, because I was prepared to call bullshit on Carl's dart throwing.
Oh, yeah? Why?
Because, you know, you think when he loses an eye, he loses his depth perception, and that would cause the darts to go either high or low, not left or right. But apparently,
left or right. I'm thinking like you would just go short.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You'd miss up or down.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
But so I went back and I looked, because we got an email from Edwin D, who was talking about this.
Eddie D.
And I looked up, you know, what the symptoms of losing an eye are, and essentially they're exactly that.
One of them
you lose
is sucking at darts.
One of them is sucking at darts. The other is you lose your depth perception. The other is lack of peripheral vision, apparently, like a 10 to 20% peripheral vision.
The whole half of your head missing, though.
But if you go back and you look at Carl shooting guns in seasons three, four, five, six.
Right.
Before he loses his eye, he's actually right-handed. So that's why he's missing. He's actually cross-dominant now. So, like, he's trying to throw with his right eye and his left hand.
Why did he switch hands? Just because he lost his eye? I think that's, like, going back two steps.
Right. I think it's because he doesn't know any better. I think, like, he's trying to compensate, and nobody's fucking telling him.
Okay.
Maybe nobody even knows in the show.
I thought I would have picked up on the fact that he was a lefty before now.
Yeah, he's not.
Interesting.
He's becoming a lefty. And, like, I looked, and you can correct your stance for those
sure.
sorts of things. But
right.
I don't know. It was something that The Walking Dead actually did really well
right.
that I was prepared to call bullshit on. Hmm. And then I looked into it further, and I was like, okay, yeah, that works.
Well, there you go. Michonne then gives Rick a proper goodbye. That lasted 17 minutes and resulted in this episode getting an M rating. No, honestly, they just had a really passionate kiss.
Yeah.
Carl, after soaking all that up, asks why she didn't go with his dad, and she said, I have to figure things out, like how we can do this, if we can. And Carl says, yeah, but the problem is dad's wrong. And she goes, I think he is, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Fair adult response that Carl gets.
Yep.
I liked it. They continued to have great chemistry. Everyone, all three of them.
Yeah.
Enid then tries sneaking out, but Carl finds her. She needs to go see Maggie and make sure she's okay, and she's going to walk to the hilltop if necessary. Carl says, I'm not saving you anymore. And she goes, oh, that's what you did for me in the armory? And she said, well, you made it back. It didn't seem so tough. And he says, I'm not talking about that. He's referring to saving her from the trauma of seeing men get their heads bashed in. Mm-hmm. And she says, I'm sorry you had to see that. And he goes, I'm not. Which makes this whole conversation pretty fucking pointless. And I'm grading it yeah. on a teenage curve, so it's not really annoying. But Jesus,
right.
dude. Like, what are we even trying to argue here? Who's right? Who's wrong?
Yep.
You know?
And then not 10 minutes from now, you're going to go save her again.
Like, you didn't lock her in a cabinet because you didn't want her to see Glenn's head bashed in. Because you're
right.
not a fucking fortune teller, number one.
Yep.
Number two... if you saved her for something that you think that a person needed to see in living this world, then did you save her at all? Like,
well, maybe he realizes that he's a little fucked up and that seeing these things would have an effect on her that would push her more in the direction of him, and he thinks that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
He wants to preserve her innocence, and I know, like, maybe it should be up to her
yeah,
to preserve
no,
her
that's,
own goddamn innocence.
That's,
but
that's
what
thought,
Carl,
sure.
I think... is going through his head in this scene.
Right.
And, you know, it's a fucked
well,
up teenager here.
Well, not only that,
but
Rick has got a little bit of a control issue as well.
Yeah.
So it would not surprise me or blow my hair back to find out that Carl would try to assert that same kind of control over someone he's growing an affection for.
Mm-hmm.
Enid, I just don't think, is a type that's going to brook it.
No, no.
Well, I mean, she
no.
kind of is a little bit wishy-washy on that more than I would like for her character to
She's
be.
She's also a teenage girl, so we got to cut her some slack. But she does have an indignant, strong streak in her.
Yes.
Which I like. That's one of the things about her character that makes her
She's
compelling.
She's talking to a 14-year-old in a sheriff's hat, man.
I
like,
know.
Never forget that, Enid. Never forget that you're talking to a 15-year-old maybe now with a sheriff's hat on.
Mm-hmm.
Sasha then insists that Jesus has to save Gregory's mind, but he's not in charge because he's not a leader, even though he does a lot of leaderly things in this episode.
Yeah.
I don't understand the people that say, I don't want to lead because I'm not a leader. I mean, it just always seems as like, I want to... It always seems like it's from people that want to throw bombs and not put forth solutions, you know? Which that doesn't seem like it's Jesus, so...
No, I think... I'm imagining there's something in his past that has proved to him that he's not a leader.
Yeah.
Or at least got that idea in his head, and he doesn't want to repeat it.
He got sent on a mission by his old man, only lasted 33 years on the job, and died ignominiously. Yeah, something like that in his past, maybe?
Yeah, maybe like similar to Abraham. You know, if you throw Abraham in a family situation, he's probably like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Tied up his son on Mount Sinai and tried to sacrifice him, and God says, that's not what I want, you idiot.
Wrong,
why would you think
wrong
that?
Abraham, I think. But he probably wouldn't want to be... you know, part of this sort of family again, or thrust into a situation where he has to make the decisions for a family. So,
yeah.
I think there's more to Jesus. We just haven't seen it yet, and I'm interested in what that might be.
Yeah. So Some of this dialogue, you throw in the name Jesus, and it's just funny. Mm-hmm. At one point, she asks, exasperated, "What do you want, Jesus? What do you want this place to be?" And he says, "I just try to help people." And she says, "You got to do more." Jesus then hands over the broken taillight necklace that Sasha made from Abraham way back when. Mm-hmm. Maggie walks in, asks him why they burned her dead, and he says it's the reminder to just keep going, that the only reminders we need is each other, that the people existed, which makes sense. If you don't, I mean, that's the thing about a graveyard, right? You walk through a graveyard and 99.9% of the graves mean nothing to you.
Sure.
You know, so it's like, it does seem like a, you know, and I'm not judging anybody because everybody's death and burial customs their own damn business. But the way I look at it is, yeah, if everyone that remembered you as a person is dead and gone and doesn't remember you, then they're not going to visit your grave either.
That's true. Yeah.
So
I imagine.
Unless somehow you achieve posthumous fame.
Right.
You know, if you're a Edgar Allan Poe, which was he even buried or he just died in a gutter? I had to go visit a gutter in New England to pay homage to him.
Probably.
I don't know.
You're going to have to go visit a pyramid-shaped sarcophagus to get with Nick Cage after his death.
Maybe it's that you look for the crow that's saying nevermore, and that's when you found Poe's grave. Anyway, Maggie comes in, and we already talked about that. Sasha, after Jesus leaves, Sasha has the opinion that Gregory's an idiot, and Maggie says it's worse, he's a coward.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's right, because a coward is smart, so you can't really fully anticipate all the ways they're going to fuck you, whereas an idiot is, like, usually consistent in how they're going to fuck you. You can kind of account for the weaknesses of an idiot, but a coward, who knows?
Yeah.
Enid's riding along the road on a bike, and she's ambushed, kinda, by a walker.
Real far away.
And Carl shows his hereditary driving talent by poorly driving a Lincoln Town Car and plowing a zombie in both the front and flipping in reverse the back. Kind of a massive overreaction to a single walker that Enid is more than capable of taking over.
But you gotta imagine, like, you're a 13 to 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You somehow get hold of a car. I don't know who's letting you take that car out, but you got one.
Right.
Now
again, who is responsible for keeping Olivia? Olivia, you are shit keeping track of things.
Yeah.
Do not issue Carl a Lincoln Town Car, please.
How much fun would that be, though? That'd be awesome.
You could put in your, like, Matthew McConaughey.
What?
He's the Lincoln spokesman. This is a Lincoln Town Car.
This is not a town car.
It is a Lincoln Town Car.
I thought it was.
Maybe it's a Crown Vic. I thought it was a Lincoln Town
Car. I thought somebody said it was an AMC Pacer.
No, oh shit. No, that's the post-apocalyptic sawed-off muscle car that Maggie backs over the tracker. Or the tractor.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I thought it was an AMC Gremlin, but then again, I'm not
I don't know
an expert in the finer points of AMC's cars.
Funny that they're using AMC, though.
It is funny.
Pretty good.
It is pretty funny.
And they're all pieces of shit.
And they're also backing and destroying them. This might be a sign of distress from the filmmakers.
Could be.
Where was I at? Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm still... Okay, yes, it's impressive to go and kill your girlfriend's zombie, but even
and
more
fun.
Impressive... would be to pull up and be like, hey, get in. Let's ride to the hilltop in style.
Oh, yeah. I guess then they have to walk. He destroys that car, doesn't he?
Yeah. Then they get to... I mean, they wouldn't have gotten the roller skate, so I guess there's that.
Yeah. He also crashes into pillars, these pylons that say drive slowly, which I thought was pretty funny.
I mean, at least he didn't hit the zombie and then flip the car end over end six or seven times and have the whole community risk going out to rescue him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, remember those days?
I do.
Saviors open up the gates at night and the hilltop, and they set fires. They do a whole bunch of shit that seems like it would make a lot of noise and get the lookouts alerted, but whatever.
Yeah, what? Where are the lookouts?
Yeah, like, they opened the gates, came into the town, and set up a bunch of bonfires, and no one knew until they started blasting Beethoven.
Did they drive that car in? Did they push it in?
I'm still saying, like, if you had any kind of competent lookout, they would have, like, as the gate started slowly swing open, they would have said, hey, what are you doing? And as they started assembling the bonfires, they'd be like, there's no scheduled bonfires tonight.
Yeah.
I don't know. The hilltop, not exactly. I mean, they got to be more what's the opposite of inept? Ept? They got to be more ept than Alexandrians because, my God, how could you not be? But I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
And then they start funneling zombies into the complex. Maggie and Sasha spring into action and escape to the roof of their trailer while Maggie agrees to sit still for the sake of her baby. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, she's going to find a way to be badass and also sit down.
No! No, spoiler alert, she hauls her ass up onto the rooftop through a fucking sunroof.
Has to jump down.
Has to pull herself up. She's not being lifted like Sasha is.
And she doesn't have a ladder either. She's also got some ramshackle stairs.
How did she get down? How'd she get up?
Tables and chairs arrangement.
This placenta is now 100% ripped, man. There's no way that can be good for you in her state.
Oh, man. Jesus then pops down and Maggie shouts that Sasha's alone down there, that she has to be saved. She doesn't. She's awesome. Maggie then takes charge, ordering people to close up the gates. They don't. Mm-hmm. Sasha and Jesus are total badasses. Jesus, in particular, is doing his brand of post-apocalyptic parkour.
It was kind of cool.
Kung fu action.
Yeah. Like, the guy they got to do this stuff, yeah. I mean, it's the actual actor, you can tell.
Oh, yeah.
And he's solid.
He's cool.
He knows what he's doing.
Not only is he super athletic and able to do these and these sick moves that the comic book Jesus does, but he also just really looks like a Hallmark Family production of Jesus of Nazarene. I mean, he's very, very Jesus looking.
This would have been like 40% cooler, though, if it was Michonne instead of Sasha. Because how badass would that be? Kung Fu Dude and Sword Lady.
Oh, yeah.
Going at it.
That should be a spinoff series. Kung Fu Dude. Like just take Into the Badlands and Walking Dead. You've already got them mixed together, man. You don't need two shows.
But Maggie pulled it out of the fire here.
Yeah.
Figuratively.
She finds a tractor somewhere inside the city gates.
Well, we saw it in the background. It was behind the graveyard where
they
buried him.
Yeah. I didn't see it before, and I'm like thinking, why would you need that big of a tractor to farm land inside the hilltop?
But that's fair.
Whatever. I mean, I guess you wouldn't park your tractor on the outside either if you were plowing crops and stuff.
Maybe they don't use it for farming, but it's there.
It's just for zombie rolling over.
Yeah.
In case of zombie, haul ass. Unfortunately, they did have this cool post-apocalyptic gremlin. You said as a pacer.
I that's what someone told me.
But it had all the windows like all barred up, and it had like a cool stainless steel middle finger that's mounted to the wiper. That would have been
pretty
funny to shine people on in your rear view.
Is that a hint that the blacksmith of this town actually did this?
Probably. Who else? But she starts backing over basically everything, which I admit is kind of awesome.
It was fucking cool.
I don't even know how they did the tractor backing over to zombie effects, because it looked for all the world like she was running over real people.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously she wasn't, but damn.
Maybe. You don't know that.
And then she also, for whatever reason, backs over the gremlin. I felt like that was unnecessary.
Well, she's trying to stop the music, right? Like, crunch the fucking music. And it works. So I'm with her. Like, I thought this was awesome.
Okay.
Maggie just going to town with a tractor.
Can I make
she
a
gets
confession?
Zombie
I've
kill
seen
of
this
week.
Thing three times, and I just now realized that was the Neganite's car. I feel
really?
So fucked. Yeah, no, I thought someone had a really badass gremlin in the town square, man. I didn't make the connection that's the thing to play in the music. I thought they were trying to get
there
for safety.
She says it. Sasha says it.
I know she says a car.
She says there's music playing
from
the car.
Dude, this is probably the stupidest thing I've ever admitted to on the air.
I think it's hilarious.
But yeah, no, I just like, I'm like, well, that's someone at the hilltop's going to be pissed. The blacksmith, especially. God knows how long he slaved over that middle finger.
Oh, man, that's funny. Yeah, Jesus just left his car running. Stereo
Jesus
pumping.
Jesus would drive a gremlin. Of course he would.
They have Jesus and they also have Beethoven. You didn't realize that, but there's a Beethoven in this town.
Is there?
Yeah, he's the guy listening to the classical music.
Mm-mm. So Carl and Enid are talking as they're walking to the hilltop, and he says to her that he didn't look away when it was head bashing time. And she asks why. He goes, I knew that I'd need to remember it. So when I had a chance to kill Negan, I wouldn't have a choice to presumably back out. And she says, yeah, you do it for the ones you loved. And then he says, I think that no, you don't. It's not for them. It's for yourself. Or they have a debate about that. And then he apologized for locking her in the supply room, and she says, I didn't need to see it, which that's the part, like, I kind of wish that she'd push back a little bit. Like, I understand that you want to, be conciliatory towards him, but, I don't know, not needing to see it. Why didn't you need to see it?
Yeah. I mean, They're
you
both
need to see it or you don't, man.
They're both trying to feel each other out, not upset or disappoint each other, and it's awkward. I mean, that's what teenage relationships are, right? They're awkward. You're testing each other. You don't know how this works.
You're employing the Attack of the Clones defense, I see.
Well,
this is how teenagers talk. They talk about sand being coarse.
No, they talk much more vigorously than that.
And killing sand. So as long as he doesn't kill a whole camp of sand people, she's in the clear, is what you're saying.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right. Gregory isn't moved by any of the heroics on display the previous night. Jesus insists that this is proof that they need to stay. Gregory says, does some reverse psychology on him, says, fine, Jesus, why don't you take over, make all the calls, fix the fence, deal with the people, deal with the saviors. And that seems to back him off. And then he says he's going to say their thanks with a set of rhubarb preserves, I think, before sending them on their way. They have this running joke that he can't remember the woman who makes the preserves. He can't remember Maggie's name. He can't remember Aya's name.
Does he remember his own name at this point?
I think he thinks highly of himself. So okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So then Sasha is essentially trying to beg for Maggie to be able to stay, and says, "Is there anything we can do?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, we could talk about it one on one." Maggie comes back quickly to go to hell. He gets all fake defensive about the fact that he was indeed trying to, probably pressure her into having sex for saving Maggie's life. And then he goes, you know what? Forget the preserves. At the same time, the saviors motor up, and he commands Jesus to hide them in the closet.
Yep.
So we got an R. Kelly mixed into the Beethoven now. Enid and Carl discover roller skates, and it was a really nice moment.
Yeah, they hit the small things in life jackpot.
Yeah.
And that'd be fucking sweet.
Yeah, if you hadn't roller skated forever, and now you got a chance to roller skate on this empty highway in a zombie apocalypse with the person that's currently making you tingle.
Yeah.
Why not? I thought it was a nice moment, a nice scene, and well done all around. But also,
indeed,
not a ton of stuff to analyze here.
Enid needed that, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. She was not looking happy during the beginning of this scene.
It'd be funny, because they're not wearing helmets. It would be funny if one of them slipped in front and they just bashed her head in.
And then got immediately back up as a walker and
no, attacked. You die from head bashing. I think you just stay dead, right?
Can you imagine walkers on roller skates? What does that look like?
For entertainment, I think somebody should hold a walker down and put roller skates on both its hands and feet, and then put them on a hardwood floor, and then play Yakety Sax. it would at no time would it fail to cheer you up, right? Like,
yeah,
that's just your sitcom.
That you just have a room.
You just have a room full of zombies on wheels, and anytime you need to pick me up, you just go and watch them. Negan's right-hand man, Simon, pulls up to the hilltop and demands to talk to Gregory alone and informs him that he's not sure if he's heard, but all of the guys that they used to deal with are dead. He admires a painting that Gregory is awful proud of and uses this as a segue to talk about managing and how that he is a easy-to-get-along-with person. And this is kind of a refutation of our conversation we had the week before where what is the proper tone to take with a savior? Mm-hmm. Like, if you just roll over all the time, you get this situation where they increase the provocation until you got to stand up for yourself and then it's too late. Or you play the game that Rick plays where he plays it pretty close to the bone and any one time someone get their head bashed in.
Mm-hmm.
Stressful no matter which side you pick. But yeah, that's essentially, he accuses them of making the guys that died get soft. And also Gregory is, I wish Simon had said something like, look, either you think I'm the dumbest man alive or you actually are the dumbest man alive, because this plausible deniability bullshit you're trying to pull is not flying.
Mm-hmm.
I wish Simon had actually articulated something like that.
It does fly. I mean,
it does.
It
and
does
also
work.
It emboldens Gregory. He thinks he's got him by the balls now.
Yeah, I think Gregory's fooling himself.
Well,
but,
of course.
But it does.
But I guess if Simon was like, look,
see him through it at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I mean, what happens the next time he comes back? He's going to start on his knees and just go down from there.
Yeah, I actually think.
Well, poor choice of words. the situation will only spiral further down from there.
I think probably the best part of this episode is that guy. You call him Simon? I didn't pick up on his name.
I think that's what his name is. But I could be wrong. It could
the
be
milk
that
bottle
that's
guy
his,
from
could,
Westworld.
I was going to say that could be his name from Westworld because he's playing two very similar gripping characters in both series.
Right.
So but I think it's Simon.
Yeah, he's having a moment in the sun.
Isn't he? Simon Sons.
Yeah, I think he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I get a vibe from him that is very dangerous, that is scary, and I'm digging it.
Yeah, no, you're kind of like tempted to call him a lightweight version of Negan, but I don't know that he is, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he just doesn't have any reason to really show you that he's not at the moment.
The actor's name's great. Stephen Ogg.
Stephen Ogg?
Yeah, it's like a caveman actor name.
Yeah.
Ogg take role. So what's going on here? He wants to know at the end, he says, look, the people, and I did, so we said that Negan doesn't know the Hilltop and Alexander colluded, but is Simon personally suspicious of that? Because he
seems like it.
He talks a lot about, you know, we found these people who killed our people now working for us, and they're some real go-getters. Mm-hmm. This could be just reminding Hilltop that you need to step it up because we're going to have, you know, you might be challenged for your supremacy. It seems like maybe they play all these communities off each other.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, Hilltop gave his 8 pigs last week. What do you got? Steel middle finger. That's cool, but it ain't 8 pigs cool.
Yeah, so I do get the vibe that he doesn't personally necessarily believe they had nothing to do with each other, these coincidences. Like, the actor's doing a lot to sell me on that because he's, you know, despite what other actors in this show tend to do, which is just try to use silence as adding some kind of emotional weight, he's actually letting things happen during the silence. He's looking at the guy, trying to read his face. You can tell that he's trying to give him an opportunity to confess something to him.
Is he giving him anything? Because I'm not sure if you're confronted. Like, yeah, Gregory is a Weasley kind of guy.
Right.
But that's just kind of the way he is.
Oh, I meant the Stephen Ogg guy.
Yeah, yeah, no, but...
Okay.
Right, I'm just saying, like, is he getting anything for his fishing efforts?
It didn't seem like it,
no.
I guess. In the end, he got a box of whiskey.
Right.
Box of scotch.
Right.
So.
Thanks to Jesus. So he at the end, he says, is there any hitches I should be aware of here in this community? And Gregory reveals that there are. And he goes to the closet that he thinks that Maggie and Sasha are hiding in. But instead, Jesus has... So has he... Jesus clearly took him to a different closet, but did he put the alcohol in there?
I hadn't considered that. Maybe.
But, I mean, because I thought that when we were doing the live watch last night, but then when I looked at it again this morning, I'm like, well, this whole area is full of saviors. How would, you know, Jesus kind of wheel a whole several boxes full of scotch into there? I don't know. But... Yeah, someone switched, or maybe he forgot about it, or he just thought the women would be there and no one would pay attention to the box, but whatever.
Yeah.
The central thing is the box of high-end scotch, and Simon shits on it, says, I'm a gin man, but never mind, because Negan loves this shit. And also, I love it. It's like, hey, I'm going to tell him it was my idea, not yours, because I kind of want the headline on this. So, and then he forces him to kneel, and he takes his painting. And half of his stuff. And I assume he's talking about, like, a Negan half.
Yeah.
So it's more like, you know, 0.75% than it is a true 50-50 split. Or all the good stuff. Like, is he going to leave that obstetrician any medicine?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
He might be basically useless to her.
Because it does seem like that Negan didn't take the Hilltop's medicine the first time. Like, you know, or they've had they were able to have quite a bit of medicine and whatnot, and... Maybe that's just something that Negan did special for Rick's group, because I'm getting the opinion that Rick's group is the first group in a long time that's hurt him that bad.
Yeah, definitely.
So he came down like the wrath of God for that reason.
And, you know, they talk about the other saviors, the group that Rick killed, being soft or whatnot. So maybe they didn't do the proper inspection like they would have with
the
town. True.
Like they weren't squeezing him as hard as they could.
Yeah.
Or it could be things just drying up in this area. So... You know, it's kind of like that Robin Hood, animated Robin Hood deal, where it's like they want more and more taxes, but the people, they start off poor, and they're not getting any richer. So
where Robin Hood's the fox?
Yes.
That one?
Yes, he did. It's the one that was had the controversial yiffing scene.
Okay.
The late 70s, early 80s weren't ready for animated Fox sex. They just really weren't.
Nope.
Some would say that we're not ready years later. Enid and Carl finally arrive at the hilltop, and they find it's been overrun by saviors. She intuits that he wasn't just out driving and wasn't even coming to rescue her. He was on a mission to go find Negan. Mm-hmm. And Enid quotes Carl's wisdom back at him and says that, you know, killing Negan wouldn't be for would be for us, not for Glenn or Maggie or Abraham. And she says, well, if everything goes right, how do you get away? He says it doesn't matter. And she says it matters to me. And we have a teenage wasteland romance official. They're kissing foreheads and nose bridges, and they finally make
more
their way
that.
To the lips.
Yeah.
We just got hormones raging coming off the screen.
Yep.
And
good
she says,
good moment for the teenage couple.
It is.
I
actually think it's cool that Carl's getting like a full on adult plot.
Yeah.
And Enid by extension, because I thought her character is always interesting as well.
Oh yeah.
She says, please don't go. He says, I'm not. I'm going home. And she says that you're a liar. And he totally is. Totally is lying to her. Why? Why bother? Why bother with the lie when she says that she knows?
I don't know.
You're lying.
Yeah, that's a little silly, but
people do it. People do it
people
all the
do
time.
It.
Gregory explodes on Jesus and said, I told you to hide him in the closet. And he correctly says, this is a closet. And Sasha tries to get in a word edgewise, and he goes, honey, I'm talking to Jesus, which I found, again, sublimely funny.
Right.
And Jesus says, hold up, and he starts to lay down the law, says, she's staying, all of them are staying, mm-hmm. and unless you want me to make this public. And he says, you're not going to be in charge anymore, and we're all going to be one big, happy, dysfunctional family, which the hilltop doesn't seem dysfunctional except for Gregory.
Yeah.
I think this will be easier to accomplish than Jesus thinks.
I think so. I'm glad to see him stand up to Gregory because Gregory's a shitbag and a cowardly shitbag at that, and I don't think Jesus is any of those things.
You know what the shittiest, baggiest thing he's done?
What's that?
Steal Herschel's watch off. He's a grave robber.
You're right. You're right.
He's a grave robber, for God's sake. That's pretty fucking low, man. Necrophiliacs and grave robbers are like the lowest of the low in their society.
Yep.
So she steals back Glenn's watch and punches him right in the face and says, this is our home.
103% torn now.
I'm not Marcia or Dear or Honey. I'm Maggie Ree.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my torn uterus talking. So anything else to say about this?
No.
Yeah.
It was good. I enjoyed this stuff.
Yeah, and then so Jesus makes a speech about he was, you know, the Gregory was just in charge when I got here, and I guess it just happened. I couldn't imagine anyone else. I found this unconvincing.
Yeah, like I said, I think there's more to Jesus than meets the eye.
I wish I knew more because, like, is there, like, something where, like, you know, maybe he was a good peacetime kind of leader, but as soon as the Savior showed up, it was all bad? Because I could see this guy being, you know, a fake it till you make it guy like Ezekiel. But he just didn't have enough time for that to fully set in before the Negan came. He was forced to play, you know, a sniveling shitbag. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the guy still, you know, I don't know. He's the kind of guy that steal a pocket watch off of someone's grave. Like, I don't think there's ever any hope for this guy now that I think about
it. Yeah, this guy's a de facto leader. He's not an actual leader.
Yeah.
Gregory, he's lucky to be in the position he's in because he'd be cast out and or useless
right.
if he wasn't the leader of this community.
De facto, of course, from the Latin meaning the fucker.
Right.
He's the fucker leader. So
he's trying to be anyway.
Right.
He's eyeing everything that comes in the room.
And he also says, Jesus also says, I couldn't imagine anyone else in his place, but I can now. And Maggie has the nerve to turn around and say, who?
Right.
Oh, you're so adorable. You don't know how what a badass you are.
Yep.
So she leaves to go visit, I think, Glenn's grave again. And Sasha says to Jesus, because Jesus is apologizing that he couldn't get Gregory on board sooner, because if you want to make it up to us, find out where Negan lives. And Jesus is like, can do.
Yeah.
Then Sasha says something that I don't understand. I want to leave Maggie out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because that she knew Maggie went on that big spiel about not wanting to be responsible for anyone's death? And she knows this has to, like, maybe they don't do anything for with it, but finding out where Negan sleeps is step one to overthrowing him, and she knows that's important and needs to happen.
Yeah, step one to killing him, too. I mean, it feels to me like there's going to be a squad of people trying to kill Negan pretty soon. Like, Carl is going to be trying to kill Negan, Sasha, Rosita.
Maybe Maggie. Yeah, Rosita's already trying.
Right, she's getting bullets ready. There's going to be a gang of people coming after
him. That would be interesting that, like, it's not a top-down decision like Rick making everyone decide to do it. It's like a bottom-up, a grassroots execution.
Right. Could very well be.
I don't know. Jesus says he doesn't like it, and Sasha says, I don't either, but I kind of see that.
I think Maggie would want to go with her is the problem.
Well, really? Yeah. I think maybe Maggie and Rick are on the I don't want anyone else to die because of me bandwagon.
Yeah.
So they are going to have to be kind of managed around instead of leading from the front.
I mean, that is also true. Definitely. Yes. I just think she saw Maggie spring into action with a fucking tractor this episode after she told her to sit like a dog.
And she did. She sat on that air-conditioned and spring-loaded tractor seat. Some of those tractors are fucking nice, man.
I know. Yeah.
Pretty
nice. You need air conditioning out in the hot sun all day. Come on.
I mean, you don't need it, but it probably makes the job a lot easier.
You either need that or you need like a gallon of water. 2 gallons of water, maybe.
So Maggie then finds Enid, who has tied balloons to what she thinks is Glenn's grave. And I like this kind of like subtle humor that they don't really call attention to.
Enid, it's almost nice when they don't call attention to some of their jokes, isn't
it? Yeah, just let it play. Yeah. Let it play out there. Enid treats Maggie to grilled cheese and Tom. Maggie confesses to tractoring over boy in high school's Camaro, which, like, what?
That's actionable.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, I get, you know, it's not like that's unheard of in musical context. Like, you know, there's probably been a Shania Twain, a Dixie Chicks, talking about fucking up their boyfriend's ride when they step out of line, but still.
That's most of the time it's like keying it or deflating a tire. Like
flattening with the tractor seems a little extreme.
A little bit. Depends on what he did, I guess.
That's true. Maybe he flattened her car with the tractor first. It was a revenge. It's revenge tractoring. Sasha comes home and is offered dinner as well because she made a pile of grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yeah.
And asked, why are there balloons in Abraham's grave?
That's great. Yeah.
Which was really good. Maggie has now adopted a hilltop burial theory and says we don't need remembrances because we don't need to mark graves because we have us. And she then gives Enid Glenn's pocket watch and says, these are now the keys to your vagina. Don't give him that, Carl. He's got weird hair.
Yeah.
And he wears a sheriff's hat. This is just
sucks
me.
Darts.
Just take it from experience. This is the kind of guy whose Camaro you're going to be backing over with a tractor. Don't want to give him the pocket watch.
So why does she adopt this philosophy so quickly?
I think it makes sense. I really do. Like,
okay.
And she's in a situation where she probably can't mark Glenn's grave because why would you do that? You know? In fact, maybe you should probably take down the stuff and smooth over the dirt because no one can know you're here. To me, like I still think the whole diary of Maggie Rhee is on the table. Like she's going to have to be hiding from the saviors, her and Sasha.
No,
they're
definitely,
recognizable
yeah.
figures, so they're going to be fugitives within Hilltop.
Yeah.
So I think the whole like getting over the fact that you can't have big monuments and markers to people is something that A, makes sense, and B, is going to serve her stealth capability.
I guess so. It just seemed like she was gung-ho about keeping that pocket watch, and then this very much strikes me as Gregory's philosophy, not necessarily Jesus. Like, he comes into this community, Gregory's like, we burn our dead,
and
he's shouting about it.
And
like,
I rifle through their pockets.
Right. It just, I guess, surprised me that she so quickly did an about face on that.
We end the episode with Sasha sharpening her knife and smoking a big fat cigar, something that she's taken from Abraham's playbook. Jesus stows away into one of the Negan's vehicles and discovers that Carl got there first. And Jesus also takes a big swig of the premium scotch and then pours it out the back.
Must be a gin guy.
Well, what I'm thinking is that's the bottle that seemed to really impress Simon.
Well, it's the one that Gregory grabbed, right?
Right. Well, that's the one that they were all looking at. And, like, mm-hmm. that's the bottle to stick out in your mind, and this guy's going to personally present this stuff to Negan. Mm. Maybe don't drink the bottle that was out of the box and
he's
going to be
pee
easily
in it.
Recognized. Oh.
He's going to fill it up with urine.
Yeah, and if he'd spit in it or if he pissed into it, that'd make sense. But just drinking it, throwing it out, but, like, it's missing. What the hell? That's suspicious.
What could he put in there?
That would pass fine scotch?
Here's what I thought. Well... It doesn't have to pass
have
the
to
piss test,
some
but
peat at the very he'd have to get a big old block of peat and piss through it if you want even hope to
you can
pass
make
off.
That happen.
Yeah, I guess
that's good. So I thought he was just going to dump it all out and just piss him off. Like, what would they think at that point?
I guess they would think that one of the saviors had probably stolen it, and then someone would probably get their heads bashed in and be the wrong person. Ha ha.
Yeah,
just but if you're wanting to run a stealth mission,
discord.
Step one, leave no trace, man. Don't leave any obvious evidence that you were ever there.
Maybe they're going to fill it with nitroglycerin.
All I know, what Westworld crossover, eh? Yep. All I know is that Jesus stowing away with Carl to go investigate the Savior Complex sounds like a lot of fun.
It does.
I'm on board with this. And that's the episode.
All right. Do we want to get to some feedback?
I presume we have feedback.
We do.
Hey everybody, here to tell you about how you can support Bald Move by joining up for the club. And I'm doing that as a kind of commercial for the upcoming activities we're going to be doing for the club. Last year, for the month of December, we did a lot of cool stuff. We called it the 25 Days of Bald Move Christmas, and we composed an original song. We drank alcohol from a booze tree every day.
Yeah.
And then the shots we should have taken on the weekend, we took all before we did our lunch with Jim and Aaron on Fridays and got really lit up and then took to the cameras and mics. And it went better than expected. Everyone seemed to like it. Mm-hmm. This year, we're up in the odds. We're doing the badass Bald Move Christmas. Because we're shedding light on some of the non-traditional Christmas choices. We're going to do a live watch of Rocky IV,
which I didn't know was a Christmas movie, but apparently he fights Drago on Christmas Day.
Sure as shit does, and he trains a lot up in the snowy mountains of Russia, so that's yep. going to feel very atmospheric and Christmas cheery. And we're going to do a live watch of that. We're also going to do a podcast, and we're then also going to do the lunches, and they're going to be all spiced up because we got the a whiskey advent calendar
right
from the mastersofmalt.com, and every 30 minutes in the live watch, we're going to take one of these fine whiskeys down and drink them. So it will be an increasingly interesting experience. The podcast will be as you'd expect, and then we're going to drink whatever we have left for the week and on lunch. Probably doing a lot of show and tell mm-hmm. with the Christmas stuff. The next week is going to be Die Hard. Week after that is Jingle on All the Way. We're doing the same treatment of live watch, podcast, and drunken lunches for all three. And then there's also going to be a surprise fourth Christmas movie the week of Christmas coming out. So if you want to get in on that, you got to be a club member. This is stuff we're doing over the holidays just for our club members. Club.baldmove.com. Not only to support independent podcasting and keep us keep the bits flowing from the Bald Move headquarters, but you get a lot of extra stuff, and that's just a sample. If you go to club.baldmove.com, we have some free examples of some of the stuff you can get in the club. You also get ad-free feeds, VIP access to the forums, just a bunch of stuff. Check it out, club.baldmove.com.
We start off with Nola, who says some stuff about previous episodes. We're going to cover that quickly. Daryl was a lot weepier in Alexandria than he was when we last saw him in Negan's compound. Why? I think Daryl is ashamed to be back in front of his friends. He doesn't know if they blame him for Glenn's death like he blames himself. And so he's racked with guilt that he may not think he deserves to be with them. I think that's partly why he doesn't plead his case to Negan to stay in Alexandria. He believes he deserves his punishment. Thoughts?
That seems sound.
Yeah.
Also, if
Daryl is a guy who punishes himself.
Also, maybe he's trying to, like, he's finally learned his lesson, and he's like, look, I'm not going to give you anything to make you think that you have to save me because yeah. I don't want you to save me and get anyone killed. Like, you imagine if he had really played into all that stuff, maybe, you know, because Rick's kind of on a knife edge about going on along with this stuff. At any mm-hmm. at any day, he could be like, fuck this, let's just mount up and try to kill Negan again. And maybe Daryl doesn't want that to happen. But I like that take as well.
She says also, I guess there were no repercussions for Daryl's escape attempt from Easy Street. Ugh. Yep.
Apparently not.
Guess not.
Apparently not.
Jenny D says, weren't sure if you saw the commercials, but Corey Hawkins? Who is Corey Hawkins? Is starring in a reboot of 24 on Fox. Pretty sure he's not going to make it back with Tara. Oh, it's the guy who plays Heath. Another African-American, the victim of the apocalypse. If I were Seth Gilliam, I'd start looking for other work now. Also, we might not have seen them in the season yet because Alana Masterson did have a kid after the end of season 6, so she probably wasn't ready to shoot when they started production on season 7.
Sure.
That's a fair point.
No, totally.
It sucks for the show, but...
Yeah,
you know,
it sucks for the show. And
reality is what the reality is.
I'm certain if they cared, they could have gotten a couple scenes shot in advance. I just don't. Yeah. I think the bigger problem is they just don't. You're not going to sweat a detail like that. They're not going to sweat day, night, raining, clear skies. Mm-hmm. They're not going to sweat like, oh, you know what? Just take a couple weeks. We'll shoot around you for 8-9 episodes.
They
even though you're
like recast her for a few weeks, like they did The Mountain.
Sure,
in Game of Thrones.
We need you to just kind of like come in. We need some girl to come in and fist bump people and then cry.
Right.
Ugly cry. Make a really ugly cry.
For like 3 weeks and then you'll be back and it'll be good.
Yeah.
No one will notice.
That totally is something they could have tried.
Craig says, the question came up last week about whether the blender gun was still in play. I think it's a safe bet that the gun is long gone since a couple of seasons ago we saw Nicholas take it and then attempt to kill Glenn. Of course, that didn't happen, so I assume the blender gun was what Nicholas eventually killed himself with in the Dumpster Gate episode.
Like I said, I felt like the blender gun was dealt with.
Yeah. It's out there somewhere, but nowhere near our survivors.
Right.
Melanie says, as for why Rick was okay lying about Maggie but not guns, Maggie is a person. Guns are not. And I think we both agree with that.
Sure.
The people are...
While she might be indeed a pistol, she is not literally a gun.
Good one. Handing over a gun or even a fuck ton of guns is categorically not the same thing as handing over a person. These things are not equal, and for Rick to recognize that that is neither bad storytelling nor inconsistent with his character. I know you aren't jerks who meant it that way. I'm a woman, and I had the same thoughts you guys did, and it took me a few days to work out how to even articulate my discomfort. I'm not judging you for it because I was right there with you wondering the same thing, but it should probably bother us that we even wondered.
Well,
yeah, so when I talked about that, I was not saying he should have given up Maggie because he gave up the guns. I was saying, in for a penny, in for a pound, right? You've already hidden something from him.
Right.
Hide some guns, too.
Yeah. Either one of those are merit death. And I guess, like, more to her point, she's saying, like, if you're going to take a risk on anything, take a risk on someone's life.
Right, but the risk is already taken once you've done that.
But also,
so now take the risk of having some guns and some protection and...
Yeah. No, and I also think it's fair to explore the cost of, you know, how much do you sacrifice for one person, good of the many versus good of the few, and the fact that, like, Seth and Rick do this, not Seth, Jesus, Father Gabriel and Rick do this unilaterally. It's not like they pull Alexandria and everybody like, yep, I'm comfortable with one of my friends or family being beat to death because of this girl that you're attached to, who
That's
also
true.
is a brand new person to most of us.
Mm-hmm.
So... I wasn't even thinking of like, oh, you monsters, it's a woman. I knew all that, but I'm like, you know, these are some of the tough questions you got to ask yourself as a leader in Rick's position.
Hmm.
So like, I'm not even going to back away and say I wasn't going there. I was totally going there. And I think it's fair to wonder at what point do you, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, you know, the potential risk. So if he gives up Maggie, that's a guaranteed problem for Maggie.
Right.
If he keeps Maggie around and hides her... That's a potential problem later in the future. So
sure.
I would say those two things are probably not equal, and I would make the same call Rick did.
No, the risk analysis isn't.
Right, right. You're so, right. You know, that's the decision I would make. And then I would also make the decision, you know what? I've already done something Negan's going to kill somebody for. Let's do some more and keep some weapons around.
Right. Like, you know, let's do the same risk analysis about, you know, that we... And the other thing is... I think this also serves to show the difference between a guy like Rick, a girl like Maggie, and a guy like Gregory.
Uh-huh.
Gregory sells people out. Maggie and Rick don't.
Yep. Yep. It seems to be the case. Let's move on to Ryan. He says, what's up, guys? Just wanted to send this link. It is a link to an article about Daryl's Morse code message to Rick. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
No. Holy shit.
Okay.
When did this...
So when this was when Daryl's hauled off the truck to come examine Alexandria with the Neganites.
Okay.
So early on in the episode, there's a Morse code chalkboard or poster or something in the background.
Right. No, I remember us saying
you can see all the letters with all the symbols.
Yep. I remember us making a joke on the live watch about it.
Yeah, and then later on, Daryl gets off the truck and he's conspicuously blinking. Now, a lot of people were just thinking, myself included, that this was him clearing his eyes because he hasn't seen sunlight in a while.
Right, right.
Which makes sense, but a lot of people were also speculating this may be Morse code to Rick.
If it is, what was the Morse code message?
If it was, it's IEAST.
IEAST.
Which could potentially be I East or I'm East.
Oh.
Is he trying to maybe say where
they're coming from?
Where Negan's compound is.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a possibility. It's pretty slick.
Almost too slick. Like the fact that
I don't believe Rick could do it.
You're going to introduce this Morse code element as a chalkboard feature?
Uh-huh.
Like, and I remember us making a joke, like, who the fuck is communicating through Morse code? Like, what purpose could this have? Like, and I mean... All right.
It's like the idea that Rick would realize in the moment that that is in fact what Daryl is doing and then remember exactly the dots and dashes did.
If you're good at Morse code, you can just read that shit.
Right. Like, we've never seen Rick ever use Morse code.
No.
So I don't buy that Rick would have picked up on it.
Right. And that you'd be able to do it just like, because I feel like it takes a good, like, probably year of constant use before you get it, like, it's a language to you, you know?
Sure.
Same with, like, signal flags or anything. Like, mm-hmm. Like if you served as a sub midshipman on a destroyer in the World War II, you could probably read Morse code through someone's eye blinking or something. But
you probably just see Morse code in your sleep.
You probably
see it everywhere.
But otherwise, get the fuck out of here.
Right.
And also, that probably should have been a bigger deal. God damn it. That does seem likely, but why wouldn't they make it a bigger deal?
I feel like maybe they will eventually.
Okay.
Maybe here it was just the tease.
Okay. All right. Well, good catch, if so. I East.
Yeah. Dan from Philly says, I love to point out all the bullshit this show throws at us, and man, is it a lot. The fact that two Alpha Survivor kids decided to don roller skates, the 5 episodes it took to get back to Maggie, Carl's hair... But when you use an AMC Pacer as a rolling death car, you get my props. After all, that car and this show have a lot in common. Very rarely do you see either one working well. Man,
wasn't there like a fire hazard on one of those cars too? Or is that the Pinto?
I think that might be what he's referring to. That might have been a Pinto, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, which is not an AMC car.
Because like there was no shortage of really shitty.
Oh yeah.
You know, those were the Aztec or Pontiac Aztecs of the day, where everyone just kind of like. Why? What?
Yeah.
Although I was researching a little bit into it, and I guess some of them were highly regarded as like pocket muscle cars. That seems hard to believe, but...
Well, if you put a big enough engine in it, so big that it maybe explodes
every
so often.
No, I get the whole concept of a sleeper. Like, that's really cool when you have, what looks like an otherwise sleepy sedan that turns out it's a fire-breathing monster. Like, that's... I always thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
The sleeper car definitely has a place in my heart. I just didn't see, like... It's just fucking ugly, man.
It's hideous, yeah.
They really are.
Sir Nerd 84 says, about the future of the Negan-Rick storyline, something I haven't heard anyone talk about is the fact that Judith is still alive. What are your thoughts on Negan ending Judith's life to cement his place in villain history? Too squicky for you to...
It's not too squicky. It's just like, really? Murdering a baby is going to get some people. They're like, let's give this Negan guy a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I don't think they're doing a bad job conveying he's an evil guy.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, that's...
They don't need
you
it.
You don't need to further inflame, like, every second the saviors are on screen, I'm just like, oh, these guys need to die. These guys need to die.
Yeah.
So, you know, killing a baby would just, I feel like, be a little exploitative for no real dramatic or storytelling reason.
If the you guys need to die trend starts to reverse,
mm-hmm.
maybe they need to, you know, steer back in the right direction.
Sure.
They could have that happen, but, you know, I'm rooting for the zombie. Hopefully it doesn't bash its brains in.
Yeah, I mean, if the Alexandrians start this whole here's not here, them ain't us bullshit again,
right.
Then maybe we start swinging back towards the Savior's sympathy, but then you got to kill a Judith. You got to.
Nathan E. says, holy shit, they actually did it. It took 5 episodes this season, but The Walking Dead actually managed to tell 2 storylines in 1 episode.
I think 2 is cutting it. I think it's 3.
That's
you got,
fair.
Michonne's point of view. You got Carl and Enid's story, and you got the shit going on at the Hilltop.
I know it's a little dry pie, but wouldn't it be great if more episodes were like this?
Yes.
I like how the 2 storylines merged into 1 at the end to move the plot forward. That was also very good.
I think it's de facto the fucker more interesting when you have multiple plots that, and it also allows one plot to be kind of a info dump or a character moment without dragging down, because you can also have some action or suspense in other plots.
He goes on, also, Carl wants to infiltrate the Savior compound, but how does he plan to defend himself? We know he couldn't have taken a gun from Alexandria. Assuming Jesus doesn't give him anything, is there a chance he took a weapon from Hilltop off screen?
Darts.
And if
he's got 6 of them.
I was going to say he took the darts with him, but he can't hit anything with those darts.
That's the thing. He's like, that's the beginning montage. You didn't see the rest of it.
Maybe he thinks he can get good enough on the truck. He's going to be throwing those darts.
Little known, there is a abandoned warehouse in the Virginia DC Metroplex that all, you know, when the lawn darts company went out of business because everybody sued them for safety, they all were warehoused there, and he's found a warehouse full of jarts, and he's going to jart up all of the Savior's complex.
Okay,
they'll never see it coming.
I'm not sure he needs a weapon to defend himself now that he's got Jesus.
That's true.
Jesus is pretty badass.
He's got Jesus as his co-pilot.
Jesus on his side.
I guess he's got a knife and he's just going to try to get in close.
Probably.
I mean, maybe he thinks his plan is that Negan is fascinated by me. He's probably going to give a big watermelon ball speech about me and put his arm on my shoulder, and that's when I'm going to slide this knife in between his ribs.
Yeah, I mean, maybe his story is going to just be, I wanted to come check out the place. Like, he doesn't have to say, hey, I'm here to kill you.
Right. I mean, just him showing up, I think Negan's going to, it's Rick's son, so he's going to get a personal audience with him. He's going to massively underestimate Carl, and Carl is probably smart enough to count on all those things happening. He's got all the previous interactions with Negan, where Negan seems like, you know, he is impressed with him and doesn't want to hurt him, probably because also that's a lot of leverage he has over Rick.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very curious to see how they handle this moment.
Tony M. says, finally we get a confrontation of the cocktease that was Carl and Enid. Carl has someone now, and I get interested in the people that have someone to love in a romantic way.
Yeah, that's something they can lose. So that makes them a lot more interesting than the faceless hordes of Alexander and the Hilltop.
Yep. I thought no one could replace the hole in my heart that was my favorite character, Glenn, but Carl filled the hole this episode. Did he?
I don't think
he did. I didn't see that on screen.
He got the first, maybe second base because the camera was cut pretty high. I don't know. Fill in the hole? Might have to wait until he gets back from
the
Saviors.
That is crass. I disapprove.
Really?
Yeah.
On our podcast?
I disapprove.
Okay. Noted.
Mike from Kentucky says, I really tried to ignore all the obvious stuff in The Walking Dead that the show fails on. But for years, I've been wondering why no one grabbed a couple of big tractors and bush hogs and just started driving through the herds. Now it seems even more painfully obvious that the most dramatic tension on the show is created by stupidity. To make
Can you imagine what a fucking combine?
Yeah.
Like one of those big rig, fully enclosed, 30-foot wide combines would do to like a herd.
Yeah, it'd be disgusting and amazing.
It would make a highway through the walkers, no problem.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And they're out there. They're in abundance. I mean, it's Georgia, for God's sake.
Yeah.
They grow stuff there.
You can probably find a giant-ass combine, international John Deere combine, in any state in the Union.
Yeah.
Barring maybe Alaska. Why the fuck would Alaska have combines?
They obviously can't grow anything in their dead soil.
Right.
He goes on
to make... Arizona's a bad choice for combine, too.
Yeah.
New Mexico.
That's not great.
All right.
Oh, there are several, apparently. To make a clumsy analogy, a good roller coaster makes you feel safe and still thrills you by doing the unexpected. A bad coaster scares you by making you think something will go wrong and you'll die. The Walking Dead feels like a cheap coaster sometimes. Hey, Hey, the Beast does that, and that's one of the all-time greats.
But it's the best there is at what it does, which is make you think that this is the time that this fucking thing's going to fly off the track and kill us.
Yep.
And that's part of the charm.
That's why I love it.
Yep.
Jenkins B says, hey guys, doesn't it bother you that every other character in this show, besides whoever is the current villain, is always a joke and can be easily manipulated, influenced, taken advantage of, or overpowered by even one of our main or secondary characters?
Yeah.
I'm aware that our group members are strong and have been molded by their experiences in the apocalypse, but likewise, haven't Gregory, Jesus, Ezekiel, etc.?
Right.
Many times in the show, these other characters we encounter get easily swayed from their customs, beliefs, and traditions of doing things by one rousing, halftime-esque speech from a Maggie, Sasha, Glenn, etc. For once, I'd like to see a strong-willed character who isn't a villain. The closest I've come to seeing one is Enid. She is quickly becoming my favorite character on the show, and I hope she doesn't fall into the Walking Dead stereotype and becomes Carl's damsel puppet.
That's a good point, and there's certainly a danger at some of the relatively weak storytelling told in a show that that'll happen. Mm-hmm. But I mean, on the other hand, I'm a Star Trek fan, and like honestly, 90% of Star Trek is them going to planets that have obviously backwards customs and bullshit. Picard / Janeway / Kirk giving a speech about how fucking backwards and stupid it is, and them, of course, being right. So, like, maybe I don't notice that as much because, yeah, you're right. Like, it does seem like whoever is got, like, their name in the front of the episode is going to just bowl over whoever is the guest star.
Yeah.
By design.
Yeah. We're getting the hero's point of view, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the hero is someone we want to identify with, and we want to be right. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
It would be nice, and maybe that... I guess eventually the question is, what happens when you run into someone just like Rick? Like, I guess that would be the most interesting possibility, is if Alexandria ran into another Alexandria, where there's nothing overtly villainous about what's going on. Like, there's no... the guy having 13 wives and ironing people's face. There's no the police class raping people in the back. There's no people getting hot plates. It's just a bunch of survivors who are bitter and paranoid from their experiences, and you play them off one another. That would be super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, even with Ezekiel and his tribe up there, it seems like...
maybe that's the closest.
They're close, but they're not those battle-hardened people, right?
They still have some fighters, but like Ezekiel's not Rick,
right?
At all.
Yeah, and his people aren't the survivors from our main group, right? His people are more like the Alexandrians or the people from Woodbury. They're kind of sheltered from all the hardships.
Yeah, that's true. The people in the kingdom proper. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Shout out to Edwin D, who gave me all the information about darts and cross sight shooting and all that stuff.
What do you say about jarts?
He tells me to stay away from them. They're very dangerous. Tom in a Volkswagen has a light ribbing for you here.
Uh-oh,
Aaron.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm unribbable.
He says, Aaron is often mentioned that he enjoys the Rick-Carl father-son dynamic. I want to help Aaron out. Even adjusting for the hypothetical zombie apocalypse world, Rick is a moron.
Okay.
Please don't be like Rick. There was a time Rick herded a gabillion zombies and cattle drove said zombies right by the idyllic community Rick and his followers call home.
Uh-huh.
Carl must have been thinking, damn, my dad is an idiot. I lost an eye for this.
Uh-huh.
Later, Rick, without knowing the relative strength, starts a war with mysterious saviors. Carl, direct quote, dad did it again. What the fuck? I hope I don't get stabbed.
Yeah.
While under the care, in scare quotes, of his father, Carl has been shot twice. Please enlighten us. What is it about Rick and Carl that captures your attention? Bad choices, failed leadership, shared headgear. Anxious listeners are curious.
128 ounces of chocolate pudding. That you're right. The only thing Carl's ever done to rebel is constantly trying to escape his inept parents in season two.
That's true.
And mostly succeed.
And still calling bullshit on all his dad's stuff.
And eat a gallon of chocolate pudding.
Right.
Which is probably punishment. In itself.
I mean, real talk, people fuck up, you know? I mean, Rick fucked up.
Yeah,
he
paid
the price.
Yeah, he fucks up a lot. But on this end, I do think that, I don't know, like, this stretches back to, like, I'm kind of a sap and I'm a sucker. Like, I think of Rick and Carl and I think of the time, like, when, like, Rick pulls up for the first time and is reunited with his family, and, like, you know, Chandler Riggs, like, going for broke for a little boy or being reunited for his dad performance, and, you know, Rick having to explain things to Carl up in the attic of the farmhouse, There's been a lot of, like, really good moments that they've had. You know, Carl having to kill his mom. And, like,
his dad would have approved of.
And I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. It's just, I don't know. Like, I'm a little bit more of a sucker for that stuff. And despite their failures, I kind of want them to succeed. I want them to figure this out.
And really, the bad plan stuff is on the people around him, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody was calling bullshit on his plan, even though it was obviously bad. We did. Carl did.
Right.
Nobody else did.
Right. Well, but the other thing is, no one else had a better plan.
There are a thousand better plans. Someone could have had one.
Carhartt should have brought it up.
That's on him.
Yeah, they
should have
got Reg's blueprint paper and, like, done it like Tom and Jerry, where he had the big old, like, plan that unfolds slowly every episode. Give him a better option. Don't just let Rick steamroll you.
So Jeff in Raleigh, North Carolina, says, as far as last night's Walking Dead, I loved it. I've already seen a few critics trash it, so I felt compelled to write in and offer a dissenting voice, assuming you guys feel the same way as the other critics. Not really.
No, I don't think this is a trash-worthy episode.
No.
This is a above-average episode of The Walking Dead.
Yeah. In my opinion, Go-Getters was 90% of what could be good about The Walking Dead. The Enid and Carl young love montage was sweet and unexpected. The stubbornness and staleness of the Hilltop leader juxtaposed against the vitality of the Maggie, Sasha, and Jesus triumvirate was beautifully played. There was even the gratuitous creative zombie kill of the week as Maggie drove the tractor over the horde. It was a light, hopeful episode. For the heavy, torture-laden episodes we've had so far this year, it was a great way to cleanse this palate. Sure, the writers should be repentant for some of the Jesus clunky dialogue, and I don't know if Lauren Cohan is a good actress, but otherwise, this episode gave me a hopeful glimmer into the future of this world, and it was much needed.
What's it like to throw over an old, outdated white guy for strong female leadership?
What is it like?
What would that feel like, I wonder?
I
might never know.
Yeah, you definitely will never know. You can live it vicariously, perhaps.
Yeah, through The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Although, no, you might be able to go for it. I say, Get the transition and just go for broke. Take some power from some old white males.
Okay, there you go. I'm not the one that was trashing this episode. Even if I thought some of this stuff was hokey and didn't work, which honestly I can't think of anything that jumped out other than Gregory's inept leadership, but that's part of the plot. The fact that they deftly balanced multiple storylines is something that, like, even if I thought this was secretly shit, I'd probably at least try to carry its water, because I want them to encourage them to do that more.
Now, how do we know you're not doing that right now?
Because I'm openly and honestly talking about the dual nature of my
work. And not secretly hiding the fact that you think it was shit?
No, I don't. I didn't. Like I said, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen on television, but it's certainly not, like...
Right.
I didn't read any of the critical analysis, because, number one, it's getting harder and harder to find. Like, most of my standbys quit watching the show. Like, Steppenwald checked out, I think, 2 seasons ago, and he was one of the last of the holdouts. I thought it's above average for this era of The Walking Dead episode, and suffered from none of the storytelling weaknesses that plagued the show.
Yeah, that's always rough when you get, thinking about it critically, that's kind of starts to decline. And then you can sort of tell how good a show is by how many professionals are talking about it, right?
Right.
Because I look at, there's a million and a half. There's more than there's ever been BuzzFeed fucking Huffington Post articles out there about this show.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the top 10 things you missed, talking about Morse code and Dale's eyes.
Right.
Daryl's eyes, rather. There are 1,001 of those, but you're losing all the critics.
Mm-hmm.
You're losing the people who watch television to talk about the good and the bad of television.
Right.
Now it's just the fanboys shouting into an empty room of themselves.
Right.
And that's not useful.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean...
For me, I'm not looking to just be a champion of a show that's mediocre or a fanboy of a particular show.
Yeah.
I want to hear what people are saying about it who have actual opinions, not just, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, like, even the Morse code, like, that's a cool idea, but I kind of want to fight just giving it to them because it seems like it's not been extremely well developed.
So, yeah, like, I'm going to say yet.
Yet, right.
Right, if Daryl does this every time they come and Rick eventually goes, oh, yeah, duh, he's doing Morse code.
I'm not saying just that. I'm just saying, like, why? Why did they start teaching everyone Morse code? I mean, there's a lot of it'd be like if they somehow started communicating with Braille. Why did the community start learning to read Braille?
Wait, who?
Like, what why does Alexandrian? Why is Alexandrian as a community starting to try to teach Morse code?
I mean, there's nothing that says they're learning Morse code.
Yeah, the blackboard that has Morse code on it implies that someone is teaching Morse code in the community.
It doesn't imply that. It implies it could be a decoration. I mean, there are 1,000 things in there that. Okay, don't imply
that's what
anything.
I'm saying. So if it's just decoration or incidental, I'm never going to buy that Rick knows Morse code or has learned Morse
code. Right, but what if they have a scene where Daryl's gathering up mattresses or whatever the fuck for Negan and Rick's in the house and Daryl like conspicuously is like looking over at the Morse code thing trying to get Rick to notice.
So Daryl picked up Morse code?
Maybe he's always known it. I would buy that.
Okay, you really would?
Yeah.
Run around as a neglected youth in the woods, he picked up Morse code?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
He's more likely than just about anyone else to.
I'm just saying it's more likely that this is going to turn out to be kind
Abraham
of like
a
plot convenient thing rather than something that's going to seem cool in retrospect.
Maybe. We'll see how they handle it.
Yeah, we'll have to.
Bill from Houston says, in The Walking Dead, there is always some kind of reason to shoehorn in some zombie kills just to appeal to the masses and for the showrunners to think they are staying true to the show concept. Most episodes, there is a valid reason to have zombie kills. Sometimes, though, they don't have to get really creative to be able to cram something in. Or, sorry, they have to get creative. Usually it works well enough so that I don't mind and can overlook how it is forced, but this episode has tested my patience far beyond any other. The nighttime zombie invasion in the hilltop was so unnecessary and stupid that it really detracted from the show. What was the Savior's goal in letting those zombies loose on the hilltop?
I mean, they stated it in the episode. Why are you asking me?
If they suspected Gregory of being behind the killing of the satellite station of Saviors, how could they confirm? They obviously expected everyone to be killed, so how would they get any information about settlements colluding? Everyone at the community was pretty much useless. If not for Maggie and Sasha, the whole thing would have fallen. I bet the Saviors knew everyone was useless, too. There had to be some scouting reports from Negan's group about their capabilities. I don't think it's an entirely invalid question to be asking because, I mean, if the goal was just to kill them all, why didn't they do that afterward?
I don't think the goal was to kill them all. I think their goals, as stated, was going to make you guys think that you're not safe behind these walls, that you need us, that we can protect you from threats in ways that you can't. Like, what if something happened to compromise your walls? Now, I guess if I was a hilltop, I'd be thinking, like, well, how do I get a hold of you? Do you have, like, a fucking 911? Do you have a savior precinct that you're going to keep at the hilltop to keep us safe? Like, that's
right. The
big thing. You're going to take all our guns, all our medicine, and then only see us once a week. That's some shitty-ass protection money that we're paying.
Sure.
But, again, if we just stay in-universe, Simon said we were going to let these guys come in, scare, maybe kill a couple of you, and then storm in and clean it up. And the fact that you didn't, it makes us imply.
And so they fought him off, and they were like, well, I guess that.
And I think that's what raised the whole, like, you guys seem like you're a lot of go-getters, and we know another community of go-getters. And I feel like that's where he was more openly probing than
gotcha.
People.
Gotcha. That makes more sense. Okay, I missed that line from him.
But this is the danger of this show continually underachieving, is that when they finally do come up with something that's like, that's not especially compelling, but people check out so much that they start seeing plot holes where there's none, and they start seeing shitty character development when there's none. And I mean, you know, they've like,
or
I don't
agree. Podcasters and they're taking notes and miss lines.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Or missed the fact that the car's playing music.
Right.
You know, it's really easy to be guilty of that because when the show doesn't take itself seriously, people get in the habit of not doing it. So
sure, yeah. All right. Well, I guess it's not such a good question, Bill from Houston.
Bill from Houston, come on.
Aaron says, fuck right off. that's it for the...
FRO, baby.
That's it for the feedback section. I do have some spoiler emails we might want to consider after the music, so...
Okay.
Stick around for those if you're interested. If you don't want spoilers, get the fuck out, because we are doing them after this music. And if you want to send your feedback in, I really only consider the emails. I know Aaron's on the forums doing his thing. But send it to Walking
it's
Dead.
It's not just that. Like, I actually...
Send it to walkingdead@baldmove.com.
I don't pull a lot for the big shows from forums either, but the amazing thing is we've actually succeeded in creating a fucking community.
We have,
that
yeah.
doesn't even need us at this point to succeed. So, like, there is just a lot of really fine and friendly and insightful commenters for all of our shows, and yeah. All the threads get a lot of... A lot of action there. And
despite what you might think, it's not all negative, like on The Walking Dead. There are a lot of people who like this show and listen for those rare episodes where we are all over the show as well. So,
right.
Do that if you want. WalkingDead@baldmove.com. If you'd rather send an email and get considered on the show. And that's it.
Yeah.
We will see you guys next week for the third to last episode of the season, mm-hmm. or the half season, I guess. Whatever.
Yep.
And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.
And we're back with the spoiler section. We start off. Do you have anything you want to talk about before we get into it, or
no? Because I'm not entirely sure. Like, my recollection is that Jesus did not stow away with Carl, so like I kind of know somewhat of how these storylines are going down, but they're combining them and remixing them in ways that I'm, especially since I haven't looked at this material in 3 or 4 years, I'm a little lost.
Okay. Well,
which is kind of where I want to be with the show.
Yeah.
I don't want to be expecting something that I'm looking forward to and then get swerved, so.
Yeah. Okay, we'll let the emailers do it for us then.
Oh, I did want to say that I started looking, after you mentioned, I started seeing more and more articles where I guess like Carl Riggs' father sent out this tweet about like, so thankful that.
Chandler Riggs, but yes.
What did I say, Carl Riggs? Uh-huh. The Chandler is like done with his, has fulfilled his contract with AMC, and he's looking forward to starting at Auburn, and like, you
right.
know, but like in a tone of, and now this could just be some hardball negotiating, because a lot of people point out that like if you wanted to attend the college and still shoot in Georgia, like Auburn's not the worst choice.
Okay.
That like you could maybe work around and not have to travel a lot and still be able to focus on your school, but like. If Chandler Riggs walks away from this season, or after the season, or even next season, you have to recast Carl.
You gotta, yeah.
Because you can't just wrap, like, you cannot kill Carl off. You really, I don't think you can. And I wonder if they do this, you know, past the Negan storyline where they do the, you know, time jump. And you get into Whispers. I wonder if they'll take an opportunity to just recast everyone.
Oh, wow.
Like 2 years. That like,
would,
seriously,
it would
wouldn't
feel
that...
weird for like an episode or two. But then I think.
If they do the job casting right and they did it right the first time, like that's one of the strengths of this show is I think they cast everyone impeccably.
And nail it, yeah.
Not just in the looks like, but like, you know, could act. Like, one thing that would solve all this show's long term sustainability problems is just recast everyone.
Yeah, anyone who. And sign everybody else, I guess, for another 5 years, yeah?
Right,
just
yeah.
Get them all on board for the
long
term.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that wants to come back and re-up for that, anyone that doesn't, just recast them. Like, the Norman Reeduses and the... You know, I don't have any knowledge about, like, that, but I know that, like, a lot of people have expressed, like, hey, I kind of want off this crazy train, and that makes sense to me. Like, you can't have these... These aren't animated cartoons that you can keep around for 20, 25 years like The Simpsons.
Right. I mean, we're living in a post-Mountain
world. This isn't Johnny
world.
Carson, where you can just, you know, show up and drink scotch and smoke cigarettes for an hour or two a night and get $30 million. Like,
right.
You know, this is some real fucking work. So maybe... I wonder if AMC would take the opportunity to do that. Because otherwise, long-term, I don't see how this show sustains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just... either have to hope that the money will be enough that these people will change their minds and be willing to make this their career, essentially.
That never happens. Then, right. Then I can't see the next step is like they're all going to want to get paid the same.
Right. Yeah. You have the Seinfeld problem.
And that's fine when you have four stars or friends at, what, six? But when you have like 30 people that all want, like, you know, from Jesus to Aaron to
Eugene,
and they all want top money, like, I don't know. What do you do?
I don't know, man.
I wonder. And I would love to know if there's like some kind of, bunker in AMC where they've actually gone and like planned this out. Like, what's their doomsday if Chandler Riggs and Norman Reedus and Andrew Lincoln and all those people want out? What do we do?
They'd be smart too.
Yeah.
Because it could definitely happen.
The time jump forward would be kind of an awesome way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it would be weird, but I don't think it'd be weird for as long as you'd think.
No, I mean, it's a post-Mountain world where you can recast the same character and get away with it. And people are fine with it. If not, like, if you do an even better job casting a character that's more like the one in the comic, people might even appreciate that you did it in the first place. Like, this is a better decision.
Yeah.
So
I mean, and I would hope that the money they save by recasting for presumably less known but equally capable talent, they would plow back into the writer's room.
You would hope so.
Because that would make a lot of sense. Like, you know, I would gladly get rid of the recognizable faces and, you know, as long as these people can act.
Right.
And they don't seem to have a problem finding people that can act as long as the fucking quality of the writing went up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd probably even prefer it. So anyway, that's the only kind of the thing I've been thinking about. You scaring the shit out of me with Chandler Riggs bailing and his dad, you know, either negotiating or over Twitter or else announcing that he's just out. Like, I don't know.
Right. Okay, let's go to the emailers. Brian from Baltimore says, I was listening to the most recent podcast and you guys were talking about the direction of Dwight and his true demeanor. I honestly don't think we're supposed to truly understand his character yet. I mean, he may indeed be a bad person, just not as bad as Negan. And Negan has Dwight by the balls, and he's boning his wife. Remember, in the comic, he despises Negan and ends up taking over the Saviors after helping Rick defeat Negan. During that whole plan, he still did significantly bad things to Rick's group, not only to hide the fact that he had a hand in Negan's fall, but he seemed like he didn't actually care about Rick's group either. So even though he does things to appease Negan, I don't think he minds because he is a wicked guy himself. He just doesn't want to work for Negan.
So
what's your read on that?
I mean, my recollection is that we gradually understood that about Dwight. We didn't have it revealed over the course of a single episode.
Yeah.
That then they go back and pretend like this is Dwight from last season before he had any nuance. And also, I think that introducing us to Dwight before he got his face ironed kind of fucked things up, too. But this is my longstanding complaint. When they deviate from the shit that's in the comic books, they tend to deviate wrong, and they fucking don't know really how to tell a story in a progressive, well-paced manner and without having characters walk in circles and betray advances that they have. And so like, Dwight's par for the course. I'm just disappointed that the course hasn't gotten better.
Yeah, I don't know. At some point.
And I could be wrong.
Are you surprised when your wishes are not fulfilled?
I mean, you know, like I think what you're hearing is a gradual recognition that Scott Gimple is not going to get significantly better.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to come back from one of these groups like, okay, I've had enough of these reps under my belt, and I feel like if that was happened, it would have happened last season.
Right.
And I think last season represents kind of like as good as this show is going to get from here on out. That's my fear anyway, because like, you know, if anything, it seems like that he and Nicotero and Kirkman have gotten together and decided we're doing a pretty goddamn good job of this, guys.
And they're not.
And maybe we got a problem communicating what we're wanting to do with the fans, but it's nothing we're doing on the show that's wrong. And if once you get in a bubble like that, you know,
and it's hard to refute that idea given the ratings. But
sure.
If you're looking at it critically, I think it's a much easier argument to make.
Indeed. But they don't. And so
they just might not care about that. They're making the most popular show on television.
I don't believe that Greg Nicotero and Robert Kirkman don't care about making The Walking Dead good. It's just they are insulated
from... Right, but they might have a different definition of good. good could mean not critical success, but a financial success, making the show they want to make. I mean, they might just be birds to the world. Let's do this.
Yeah, you're right.
We're making the show that we think is fun and awesome.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And they're entitled to their opinion on what they're making, certainly. Anthony B. says they're still... Okay, I've got a couple of takes here on the Sasha thing. Sasha Michonne mix-up thing. There may still be hope for Rick's girlfriend to get kidnapped. What do you think about Negan possibly kidnapping Michonne because he thinks she's a sharpshooter, seeing as they confiscated her rifle? But they don't realize that she isn't a sharpshooter but was practicing, and the real sharpshooter, which is Sasha, is still out there and is the actual threat. So the girlfriend confusion arc from the comic is still possible, but not based off looks, rather skill. This could be an interesting remix, I think.
Well, that'd be a remix not to Rick's favor. Like, I guess, would I allow the, I mean, just the fact,
let me read the second one as well.
So here's the thing. It's like, it's not like, like if you had two, if you had Sasha and I don't know, like Maeve from the Westworld, okay. They're not really the, I mean, I'm not arguing that they're the same, but like they got similar builds and skin tones and, you know, if they wore their hairs and their weird ponytail braids, like I can see how you would, but like Michonne is so visually striking and different from anyone else.
Right.
Not just in, her looks, but the way she's also accentuated those looks and the way she dresses like a Crocodile Dundee ninja woman.
Even
the way
she carries herself, yeah.
Yeah, like she's just, you're not going to even see from a distance and think, oh, well, that's, you know, that's like she's just really, really distinctive. So it's, whereas Andrea's a fucking blonde girl.
Right.
Like she literally is like, you know, a blonde. And I guess like in the comics, it was kind of weird. I mean, because I feel like the person she took, Holly was, you know, like short, spiky hair and almost, and again, if I got it is wrong, but like muscly. So maybe.
Short, spiky hair? What did Andrea have?
Like a pixie cut kind of thing, maybe.
Oh, she did?
Now I feel like I'm just making up details. The ponytail. I feel like I'm an eyewitness that didn't really get a good look at the mugger and been like, oh, yeah.
It's right. Blonde, 7 foot 12.
Sure.
It was,
blonde lizard woman.
Pretty sure it had a horse tail.
But yeah, no, I don't know, because that's the thing. Like, I guess you could say, like, okay, well, Sasha and Michonne are both black. Negan didn't get a good look at him as nighttime. He tells the saviors to grab, but I don't know. Maybe.
So, Hunter W. talks a little about that. He says, now that Sasha is looking to avenge Abraham and infiltrate Negan's compound, as Holly did in the comics, please tell me that the show is not also going to give her the Negan confusing Rick's love interest plotline. It seems like they're trending that way. I know this was discussed in one of the previous spoiler sections, but surely a show that has had such an issue killing off black characters will not do something as insensitive as creating a storyline that assumes that Sasha and Michonne can be confused for just both being black women. Is it possible for them to be that out of touch?
Well, I mean, I think there's room.
I think it's a misstep for this show, though.
You're right. You're
specifically.
I want to say, like, in a vacuum. Right. But this isn't like a vacuum. This is this is The Walking Dead. So,
I think it would be a bad idea.
But I'm trying to think is there anyone they can shift that storyline to? Because that's what I thought when Jesse kind of came on the scene. Like, I was shipping Rick and Michonne, but I'm like, well, it would make total sense if he hooks up with Jesse, because then you find another blonde. I mean, Jesse's just your stock issue blonde girl, you know?
Right.
She might have even been wearing Uggs. I don't know. But I don't know. Yeah, it seems like something that they, a minefield that they could step in, but it ain't going to keep him from stepping in it.
That's probably true.
Sure as shit isn't going to keep him from stepping in it.
Finally, Kelly from New Jersey says, so on last week's podcast, you guys were picking on Eugene for fixing a radio for a seemingly pointless reason. I have a spoiler for you from the most recent comic release, Volume 26, Call to Arms. In the beginning of the comic, Eugene is fiddling with a radio, and he actually finds contact with somebody. They have a pretty long conversation, and they talk at several different times further along in the issue. Even though this is a post-time jump in the comics, do you think this is a storyline the show is trying to pursue now?
That's a pretty big temporal remix.
Yeah, it is.
I just looked. Call to Arms includes issues from 151 to 156, so that's even beyond the Whisper plotline, I surmise.
Yeah, it's like four four issues ago.
I think, yeah, they're in the 160s that we found out last week. Yeah, yeah. I don't know, because the other thing is, like, he didn't say he was repairing, like, a shortwave radio. Like, I got that he was repairing a music-playing device.
Yeah.
If he starts having long conversation, ham radio conversations with that, I'm going to be like, what the fuck? But
yeah, things aren't transmitters, but...
Then again...
Who knows?
Then again, this is The Walking Dead, and who knows? Who knows? Yeah. I mean, I guess... We've been wondering if they would even do the jump ahead.
Yeah.
Or if they would use this as a way for the comics to get way far away and for them to tell their own story in the meantime. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like the time jump is going to be as we discussed already in the spoilers section, it's going to be useful for them to just kind of rearrange the chairs a little bit.
It seems like they're really mixing up these chairs a lot now, though. Now they're doing things in the show that haven't yet happened in the comics for another... What, 60 issues?
I'm just saying, here's the thing. I'm just saying that if these guys sat down and said, all right, we've killed off Andrea. Mm-hmm. That's a decision we were handed. So we can't, we like the charisma that and the chemistry that Andrew Lincoln and Danae Gurira have. We're going to remix that storyline that they at least thought through. The big issues, which is like Michonne, if she's really going to be Andrea, needs to become a sharpshooter. And at some point, if we want to tell this same damn story, they're going to have this confused abduction scene. And if they didn't think through those, then fuck, I don't even... if you didn't spitball that to a place where it wasn't laughable, then I don't know what these guys are doing.
Right.
Like, I get it that you show up every season, it's a clean slate, but you gotta know this shit's coming down the pike, man.
Yeah, that's your job as a showrunner.
Right.
To run the show.
Yeah.
To know that there are story beats we need to hit with our ever-changing stable of writers.
Well, like, they could just decide to do something completely different. Like, there's nothing saying that, you know, they're going to tell this exact same story. I was actually thinking, as you were reading this email, I was like, okay, who else could be, like, in a leadership position in Alexandria that would get their girlfriend / fiance / wife stolen? And I'm like... Who all is coupled up now? They did a lot of decoupling.
Carl.
If they take it, some random teenage girl and they think it's Enid.
Yeah.
That would be...
Some girl on roller skates and just...
That's Heather Graham.
Snatch her up.
Roller girl comes by and they snatch her up. I don't know. That's a definite conundrum.
That's fair. Who is coupled off now?
Like, who could be stolen and someone would be give a shit beyond, oh, that's my person, that's my neighbor, and that's my ally?
I can't think of anyone besides Rick.
Aaron and his Eric?
Right. Yep.
That's still a couple that I give a shit about, but Tara?
It?
Tara's got nobody now.
No, hers got killed.
Rick, you know, and Michonne, obviously. Maggie's got nobody. Sasha's got nobody.
Gabriel will never
Eugene's
have anybody.
Got nobody.
Eugene will never
Rosita's
have anybody.
Rosita's got fucking Spencer, but like I don't think she would give a shit if he got kidnapped.
No.
He could definitely be mistaken for any other random dude. Mm-hmm. He is like the default issue of dudes.
Huh. Yeah, so that's interesting.
They kind of have to go. If they're going to do it at all, they gotta have to go with Michonne. Mm-hmm. I guess they could do... Ezekiel flipping off the handle that someone kidnapped Carol, if they're going to go down with the Carol and Ezekiel romance angle that we talked about.
Yeah, they need to progress that further.
Because Carol's pretty, like, you know, like, I could see her, like, lots of different myths. Because that's her specialty, right? She passes herself off as other, even though she's a lioness, she passes herself off as your prototypical suburban housewife.
That's true.
So yeah. I could totally see someone stealing you. You know, I'm sure these communities are loaded with your typical middle-aged housewives.
Yeah.
Maybe they can remix of that, because I could see they already kind of have that instability, or someone like Ezekiel who emotionally overreacted that situation anyway. Maybe that would be an interesting remix.
Maybe. I don't know how it goes down in the comics.
But they'll probably just have, Michonne and Sasha, they're both black, so who could tell the difference?
Right. And they'll lean on the comics and say, hey, that's how it goes down in the comics.
Yeah,
and
but...
we had this relationship, and we just went with it. They'll be that strikes me as a little tone deaf.
Well, not only that, but like, say what you will about Charlie Allard. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Adler.
One of his critiques is like that he kind of draws everyone that looks like everyone else. Like, he's not great at making visually distinctive characters, which is one of the reasons why, like, Negan looks like a retro 50s throwback, because you have to have almost like the whole gay leather biker guy to have him visually stand apart from anybody else. And like, Abraham was like the fucking G.I. Joe, because like, you put a handlebar mustache and a tank top and a flat top, you can't mistake him for Glenn. But like, it was really hard to tell the difference between Glenn and Maggie sometimes. And when that I remember when that plot line happened, there was like contemporary people making the joke was like, well, this guy's artistic skills finally pay off, because you could plausibly abduct any of the women from Alexandria and squint and be like, I guess that could be Andrea.
Or even half the men.
Yeah. Glenn, Maggie, any of them, give them a peroxide dye job and they're Andrea. So obviously in real life that falls apart. Yeah. So.
All right. That's it. We're going to be back next week at our usual time. So we will see
Sunday,
everybody then.
Sunday at 9 o'clock for the live watch, Monday, rather, for the full podcast.
Yeah.
Podcast.
And we will see you then.
See ya. Bye.